I don't think I need a mic. We'll work on the sound here for a minute. How's that? That went okay, everybody? Okay, cool. Most of you heard, but what happened was I was sitting over there with Nels Frank and Steve last week, and I was just thinking, man, I would really like to speak, but you're going to come up here and adjust this? Then I'll tell you the rest of the thing what happened. Come on up.
It's under your shirt.
How'd that happen?
I don't know. Try it now.
Okay. How's that? So what I was doing, I was just sitting over there hanging out with the guys, and it almost exploded in me. Man, I sure would like to speak at church. But, you know, like, what do you do with that? You're going to go, hey, hello. Hi, you should let me speak. And so I just said, well, God, that one's up to you. And then I come out here and sit down. Pastor Michael comes up, and he says, Aunt Jessie, we were wondering about something, and you don't have to decide right now. Just if you want to pray about it, but we do have a question. Would you be interested in speaking next Sunday? This one, I go, I don't have to pray about that one, yes. And I thought, then when I was going down there for snack time, I told God, man, this is going to be an exciting week because you clearly have something you're wanting to share, and I'm going to get a lot out of it. This is exciting. So this was the least pressure thing I've ever done, I think, because I knew God had put it together because it was too funny, really. So anyway, we're going to find out what God shared with me this week. Not too shabby. All right. Here we go. Who remembers the letters W, W, JD?
Jesus
did. What would Jesus do? That's a good question. So I looked into the word and found out some of the things he did. And one thing it was, Mark 1:35. He prayed. I like this one, Mark 1:35. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. Well, typically I'm awake by 3 or 4 in the morning. So, yeah. And then I join it's a telephone conference thing. And these people in Miami and one guy, Chicago, and me, we all join together and pray together at 5 in the morning. So, yeah, no kidding. So now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, Jesse went out and prayed in a solitary place. But, yeah, he prayed. And so, hey, if Jesus did it, I figure maybe I should. And not everybody has to get up at 3 to go pray. I'm not saying that. But praying is good. All right. I think if Kiana had been here, I know she might think, how do you get a solitary place to go pray when you're a mother of 4 kids? How do you do that? John and Charles Wesley were born in the 1800s, and their mom, I don't know how many kids there were, but they had a whole bunch of kids, kind of like the Peterson clan. And you know, the way she prayed, she would sit in the kitchen and throw her apron over her head and prayed. That meant leave mom alone for a while, she's praying. And let me tell you what, it worked. They're the ones that started the Methodist church when it was good. The reason it's called Methodist, it's method. They methodically met with the Lord, spent time with him, studied the word, but that's how she did it. So, hey, you know, I have a whole room I can go into, let alone if you know where I live, I've got a whole park I could go pray in. All right, so, and then another thing about Jesus, he would preach. Mark 1:37. When the disciples were trying to find him, he had disappeared on them. When they found him, because he had been out praying, they said to him, everyone's looking for you. Hello? That's how I feel when I go into a nursing home. You get flooded by everyone wanting to say hi and let me tell you about my problems. Everyone's looking for me. And you know what Jesus did on that one? Everyone's looking for you. Jesus said, Well, let's go into the next towns. He didn't worry about it. God brings the right ones to you. This is verse 38. But he said, let us go into the next towns that I may preach there also, because for this purpose I've come. And that's what I go into the nursing homes for. I have fun. I have a lot of fun in the nursing homes. One of my favorite things is I'll tell new people I meet, you know, well, what do you, they say, what do you do? Well, most of the time, pretty much 6 days a week, I go to nursing homes. And, oh, that takes a special person. Just a special, I could never do that. Nobody's asking you to, but hey, that takes a special person. I share it with my nursing home residents. I tell them, they tell me it takes a special person. And you guys know about that one. Somebody who's special and enjoys having fun with you guys. They go, yeah, that's fun. Because God called me to that. And so I just every day have a ball, you know, going hanging out with all my friends. And I've got a bunch of friends. But, you know, and I'm preaching because I don't just go for the fun. I go because I love the Lord and I want my friends to know him too. So that's my goal. When I go in, I'm all relaxed, hanging out, spending time with folks. But in my heart, I'm praying, how can I reach them for the Lord? I'm always got that on my mind. How can I reach them? How can I let them know you're loved? And it takes different things for different people, you know, but I want them to know they're loved. Okay, so he prayed, he preached, and he had compassion. That's another thing Jesus did. He had compassion. In verse 41, it talked about Jesus moving with compassion. In Mark 21 through 41, there's a whole story there. Mark 5, 21 through 41. It's the one about Jairus' daughter. This guy's daughter was dying, and he came to find Jesus. And he said, would you come pray for my daughter? She's dying. And so Jesus says, sure. So he's going to come and pray for the daughter. On the way, he's surrounded by tons of people. He's going to go pray for somebody who's dying. But he stopped. And there was a lady that had an issue of blood for years. He stopped and realized she had touched his garment. And he stopped for her. And he took time out for her. So I have to know, I make my plans for a day. But sometimes God stops me because there's someone else he needs me to minister to. And I have to be super flexible. And I like it, but it takes a little bit to get used to that. And it started in the diner. You've got all these people. I was the cashier. Good thing to do, watching Esther and all them working their tails off, and I'm taking the money. And now it's the end of the day. And Esther would always cook me these really cool things, real healthy things for me. She would like boiled chicken breast, and I'd eat a salad, and I'd be sitting at the counter ready to relax. And I'm just starting to eat my chicken breast and eat my salad, and here comes somebody sitting next to me and wanting to talk. They want to talk right now, and they're sharing their heart. And it takes a minute to kind of gear down and forget about the lunch and listen to them. But you got to be ready for interruptions. You just have to be ready for those interruptions. And so Jesus was moved with compassion. And I joke around a lot. I'm in a life and death situations every single day. So mostly I joke and have fun. But I have to be careful to know right when to show compassion and to be careful with people's feelings. And God helps me. So it works out just fine. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. You got to know when people are suddenly open. All right. God wants to create a sense of destiny. So what's another thing Jesus did? He created a sense of destiny for us. People in the nursing homes, of course, often think that's the end of it. That is the end of it. My life is over. And if they don't get Jesus in their heart, they're not kidding. Well, we can create a sense of destiny in kids. That's what Brother Steve's doing right now. You know how he is. Miss Penny did that all the years with the Children's Church. Esther's talked about how much Children's Church has meant to her and how she's grown because of it. But we create a sense of destiny in people's hearts. And Jesus does that for us. We can do it not only for the kids, but we can do it for each other. And here I am in the nursing homes doing a, creating a sense of destiny for somebody who probably has 6 months to 6 years to live. But they, God has a plan still. He has a plan for them. One of the guys that I met, and some of you might not have heard this testimony, so I want to share it. So I've been doing a Bible study over at one of the nursing homes for quite a few years now. And there was a new guy that came, kind of younger, and he brought a Bible with him that actually looked like it had been read. You know, people don't usually read them. They just put them over here, you know, have them on the bookshelf. He clearly had read it, and he was new. And so he stayed around after the Bible study was over, and everybody had left except one other guy. So I asked him, I said, "Hey, Paul, it's apparent that you know the Lord." You could tell the guy knew the Lord. I said, "It's apparent you knew the Lord. When did you give your life to the Lord?" "Well, 2 weeks ago." After I had that stroke, I thought maybe I should get right with God. So we'd been saved 2 weeks. And now he, on his own, chose to lead a Bible. He moved to a different nursing home, and he started a Bible study at that nursing home. He started a Bible study there. And Friday, Shirley came, and we were doing, and he was doing the Bible study. We're the audience, but he's doing the Bible study. And in that Bible study, it included three people who were in nursing homes because of accidents. One was because she was a meth addict, and she was driving and crashed into somebody, and her car was crushed. It caught on fire, and they had to use Jaws of Life to get her out. They had an extinguisher. She was burned. Her arm was completely crushed. She lost her arm, and she got right with God. That'll about do it. And she's one of the Bible study people, and she's kind of a close friend of mine. Another one came for the first time, and it was just because of hanging out with her. Shirley had visited with her first, and then I started visiting with her. And that's all we did. We just talk about food, and what did you used to do, and why are you here, and Social Security's treating you wrong, and just ordinary stuff. And then she came to the Bible study. And Friday, she said, "I was in an accident. I caused it. We'd gone over to my dad's house, and they had the car. Everybody came in, and I went and ran and got in the car and took off." And she wasn't supposed to be driving. She was young, I think 17. And she went driving. She said, "I was drinking, and I fell asleep at the car. Fell asleep while driving the car." So she flipped the car three times, ruined the car, but lived. She didn't exactly get right with God that day, but that's what she said. And all these people are sharing things. There's another one, a Catholic gal. She was a nurse. And she came to this nursing home and came to the Bible study. And we had a lot of people coming to it. I think that day we had three. And she was one of them. It was Paul, Mary, and me. Big group. And after the Bible study, Paul led it. She started crying. And she said, "Paul, I want you to know something. I got my heart right because of you." God had already used Paul to lead someone to the Lord. Isn't that something? And then she ended up in the hospital. She was down at Center Point. I was going to see her about every other day. She's dying. The nurses were telling me all the things wrong with her, praying for her. And she's okay now. God brought her back. But even if she had died, she would go straight to heaven because of Paul. And the thing about Paul is he doesn't have a real good background. Three times he made serious attempts for suicide. One day he was telling me about this. He said, "Yeah, kind of tried to kill myself. I'd take these pills and then I'd get scared and I'd call 911. I'd call 911 on myself. Isn't that stupid?" And I go, "No, I'm glad you did." And the third time, the sheriff was kind of getting irritated with him and said, "Do you even mean to kill yourself?" "Yes." Anyway, the sheriff didn't take him to the hospital very fast, and that's why he ended up with some of the physical issues he has. Because if you take pills, it kind of wrecks you. And so he lived. And now he started the Bible study. And now Mary got her heart with God. And there's these other people coming that have had serious backgrounds. Isn't that neat? That is the coolest thing. God's using Paul. Here's a suicidal guy. And he knows a lot about the Bible. In fact, he knows so much, he has to look up John in the table of contents because he doesn't have any idea where it is. But God's using him. He uses us. It doesn't matter. When somebody's anointed, you know it. You know they're anointed. There's a sense of anointing on them. And now Paul's talking about maybe doing online seminary. He doesn't even know what that means. He would have to start with something else. But I'm not going to say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Now I'm going, that sounds great. You know, he wants to study the Bible. Isn't that cool what God's doing there? And this is just because years ago, Miss Penny told me, you should go hand out candy to the people in the nursing homes because, you know, it's Christmas time and they probably will let you in. And they did. And it's years later. So how many people have heard what I call my favorite nursing home story? What is it? I have this niece called Ma Aubrey, and she was 4. And so this is the time we went in. Elaine, me, and Aubrey went in to hand out candy. We had no idea what we're doing. Did you know that if you hand out candy to people who have aphasia, they could choke to death? Oops. I didn't know. We go in there, and we happen to come around lunchtime, and so everybody was in the dining room. And there's little 4-year-old Aubrey, Elaine, and Jesse. And we walk up there, and we weren't sure what Aubrey would think, because you know people in nursing homes look a little funny. You know, drippy noses, bent, walkers, wheelchairs, a little unusual. We didn't know what Aubrey would think. We get to the dining room where everybody is, and there's all those people. And she dead stops in the doorway. Her eyes are wide, and she goes, look at all the grandmas and grandpas everywhere. She loved it. Back to the sermons. Anyway, God can surprise us. So one of the surprises was God putting Pastor Michael and Pastor Esther as our pastors. Surprise! When Esther was about 8 years old, she wanted to join the witnessing team, go tell people about Jesus. She happened to catch it on the one time I wasn't actually going to go out and go witnessing. I was going to go over to the Nunez's house and teepee the house. It was Saturday, it was witnessing day, but it was her first day. So there she is, ready to tell the world about Jesus. And we go teepee somebody. We got caught. They were there and they saw us. We got caught. It was daytime. We couldn't teepee him. So I teepeed Jonathan instead. I didn't know what to do, so he just stood there. Anyway, that was her introduction to ministry. And now look at her. And then, of course, Michael, one of the Peterson clan that acts like a Peterson, he doesn't talk much. Kind of like James and my brother. They don't talk. And God makes him Pastor Michael. Pastor Michael. Surprise! What do you know about that? Anyway, we got to be ready for God surprising us. He gave them wisdom. He gave them authority. They guide us. And I appreciate the two of you back yonder. Thank you so much. I need guidance, and I do. Okay, another surprise. He sent me here. Now, the thing is, I was happily teaching in Texas. Been there 10 years, y'all. And I go down there, and I might get engaged. Wasn't sure if Greg was going to ask me or not, but we went together 5 years, you know. Wasn't sure. It was going good down yonder. Came up here to visit mom and dad. They had moved here. And it was Christmas morning. Things happen on these holidays. So I'm out. I thought, I wonder who's out and about on Christmas. Wonder what stores are open. So I get in. Mom and dad were asleep. It was 6 a.m. Get in the car. And they lived at Hawker Heights. You guys know, most of you know where that is. And got in the car. I was at stopped kind of at Noland and Truman, waiting for a red light. And God spoke to my heart. Surprise! He said, "You're moving here." I go, "What? Wait, is this you, God? Better not be you, God, but sure does sound like you." What a surprise. Who would ever expect him to tell me to move here? But I didn't know. I've loved it. Look what God's done. Oh my goodness, I never ever would have expected. When he surprises us, it's a good surprise. It's all good. He's got it in control. Okay. Anyway, my life verse is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. You know that one, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6? I need it. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Even if he tells you to move to Missouri, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto your own understanding, and he will direct your paths. So, see, I had run, one time I was riding in a bus, headed back to Texas. I'd been up here, or I'd been in Colorado. I was riding a bus, and I was sitting by myself, and in front of me there was a Mexican-looking fella and a Chinese-looking fella, and it was time for a break, and so everybody went in and ordered stuff, got back on the bus. The Mexican-looking fella stretched himself over the both seats because he didn't want the Chinese-looking fella to sit with him again, and that makes me mad. It just makes me mad. So I told the Chinese-looking fella, "You can sit here if you like." So he did. Turns out he is one of the first ones that had left China after the Cultural Revolution. He told me about the Cultural Revolution. And he said he was on his way to Houston to get his visa updated. And so I explained to him Houston. And that's English for you. English is crazy, but it's okay. Anyway, so he was the first one that I talked to, and I got a real desire to go to China. But it wasn't the first time I thought about China. When I was 10 years old, I saw a movie called The End of the Sixth Happiness. It had a very ungodly lady playing a Christian part, Ingrid Bergman. And it was about World War II, and this English lady had gone to China and, you know, led about 100 kids to safety during World War II. True story. My Aunt Ruth had the book. It was she had the book. It's not a big book. I borrowed it, and I copied it when I was 10 years old. I copied the whole book because I wanted my own copy. I copied it. It took me, not every minute, but it took me a whole summer, but I managed to copy the whole entire book. That was the first time I was really interested in China. And then that guy talked about that, and I thought, I want to go to China. And so everybody down in Texas knew I want to go to China. But God said, "I'm moving here." So I went to my pastor, and I said, "I think God's calling me to leave here." And he goes, "Where are you going to go, China?" I go, "No, Missouri." "Missouri? I think so." So he said, "Well, go up for a summer and we'll see, you know." But yeah, of course, here I am. That was really God. When he surprises me, I'm listening, and I'm not going to get all tense about it like I have done in the past. Okay, in fact, I wrote this down. I'm quit running my own life. I like God's techniques so much better. I'm done with that stuff. And then, of course, the famous Jeremiah 29:11. He's promised to give us a future and a hope. He knows the plans he's got. I don't know what they are, but I'm good with his ideas. Okay. Oh, yeah, about China. In case you didn't know, I did go to China. I did get to go. I didn't stay there, but I spent a summer there. And I stayed in Hong Kong. And I would get a bag of Bibles, usually about 100 Bibles. And then I made 16 trips across the border on that China trip. And if you get the year before, an American got caught and got killed taking those Bibles in. And so you never knew what might happen to you. And at the very minimum, they don't have any money. So like one group I knew about took 5 years to save enough money to send a group down to the south. They're in the north, to send a group down the south to get Bibles and take them back to the church. That church had 23,000 people in it. And the way they got away with it, because it's a communist country, is they met on a hillside. I mean, obviously, they didn't have a church building. They met on a hillside, and they had two Bibles to their name, and both of them were hand-copied. And so we had a large group going in. We had quite a few of us, I think like 10 or 12 of us going in that time, carrying Bibles, so they had to have some. And you always try to avoid the x-ray machine because then they'll know you got Bibles. Well, this time we flew in on China Airways, and we coming off the line, they had a gauntlet, a line of soldiers that they meant us go between straight to the x-ray machine. And these people had saved 5 years to get enough money to come down and get the Bibles. And that would mean they'll go back without the Bibles, 23,000 people, two handwritten copies. But we walked through the little line and we put our bags on the x-ray machine and they were full of Bibles. Goes through the x-ray machine, everything's going, we get our bags, get up, we just keep walking. Inside you're going, what in the world just happened? But we're just acting like normal tourists. And the very last one went through, my friend, an American, and she went through, and then when we got where we were able to talk, she said, do you know what? The guy looking at the x-ray machine winked at me. He obviously either was anti-communist or a Christian, and he's the only one that needed to see the Bibles and needed to let us go through. God did it. There's no way you could have planned that. Man. And we were on an island called Xiamen, and so we spent 3 days being tourists because they didn't have a lot of ways to get on and off the island. We had to wait for the next boat to leave, so that was going to be 3 days. So after that, we ate ice cream and took touristies and went climbing and looking at things. And I met a professor at Xiamen University, and he was a professor of finance. And he introduced us to his kids, college students, university students. When you're in the university in China, you're a genius to even be able to get in. You're very smart. So he hooked me up with them, and for a whole year, our kids here, the high school here, wrote to them. They each got a name to write to, and we passed letters back and forth for a whole year. One of them asked one of the students, could you send me some canceled stamps? Because the way you get your mail there at the university is they have a box. So they put it in the box, and then you go get your mail, because you don't get many people get mail. It's a primitive area, and somebody keeps stealing the stamps off the letter, ripping off the stamps. So he was hoping if somebody would just mail him some used stamps so he could have some American stamps. So we wrote to each other for about a year, and that's us, our kids, writing to university students who are going to become leadership in China. Isn't that something? Only went for a year because then Tiananmen Square happened and all the university students had to run home and hide because we weren't sure what was going to happen. They were killing university students right and left. But we had a whole year of sharing the Lord. Isn't that something? That's what we did here. And you might hear about Turkey sometimes. It's on the news, you know, it's not real Christian friendly. Years and years and years, about 60 years ago, there was a Air Force officer who was witnessing to the Turkish people, and so he got deported. But he grabbed himself a phone book while he got sent back to the United States, and they started a thing called Bibles for Asia or Bibles for Turkey at the time. And they had the names of your name, and then they had your address there. And so I hooked up with those guys and started sending Bibles to Turkey. Did it when I was in Texas, and then when I was here, our students did it also. So we sent a ton of Bibles to Turkey. Isn't that funny? And it included in there was also an invitation to get a correspondence course. And the deal is, by us mailing it from our own addresses all over the United States, they don't think to check it. I mean, because Turkey and the United States has relationship, and we, you know, economic and all that, so they don't think anything about it. So I was mailing all these Bibles. Our students were filling in the packages and all that and mailing them. And the mailman came and talked to me. Our mailman, He says, I need to show you how to do something. When you mail packages to Turkey, you've got to fill in a customs declaration form. And I've been filling them in for all of you, but you guys keep sending all these packages to Turkey. I need to have you do it. I never know what I'm doing, but God makes it work. Anyway, isn't that hilarious? Okay, so, oh yeah, one of the things is Moses wanted God to use him. God said, I'm going to use you to, he knew that he was supposed to deliver the Israelites. So Moses goes and does it his way. What was the first technique that Moses used to deliver the Israelites? He killed an Egyptian. So then he had to run, headed for 40 years in the wilderness. Then he wasn't so cocky anymore, and God used him. Long story short, God used him to deliver the Israelites. So I'm learning, don't do it on my own way or my own time. Do it God's way. Wait a minute. Don't get in a hurry. God's going to work it out. So God does have a good plan for us. We don't have to be in a hurry. Wait on God's timing and way. By the way, the fact you even know Nels and Jesse is because of God. My mom didn't have the body parts to have a baby. She wasn't born with the right stuff. Mom was pregnant with me for 6 months before she finally figured out something was happening. And that's because she said, well, I was always just a little chubby, so I didn't think anything of it. And then she said it was a farm. They lived in a farm near Greeley, Colorado. And she was working, helping do the farming. So she said, I didn't think anything about the nausea. I thought it was just the heat of the day. And my grandma said, I told her, Margaret, you're pregnant. No, Mom, I'm not pregnant. She was pregnant. So I was born, then Nels was born. And when we were kids, Mom told us, she said, God has a plan for both of you because you weren't even supposed to be here. And honestly, that's true of anybody. Of course, I think it's kind of funny about my brother. Not only did he have a plan for God, have a plan for him and for me, but there's Annie and John and James and Aiden, and there's a bunch more. When we get together for parties over at Becky's house, you need that Becky's house. You've got the people who like sports, they're in there watching sports in the living room. You've got the coffee people hanging around the coffee in the kitchen area. You got Linda and me sitting over there waiting for somebody to come talk to us because we can't get around too much. And you got all the kids outside on four-wheelers. That was just because of Nels and Elaine. Because God had a plan. God's got a plan on you too, girl. Including loving on Aunt Jessie. Okay, let's see. Oh, yeah, I said that. Oh, yeah, yeah. I wanted to point that out because God used Mom to create a sense of destiny for Nels and me. And ditto, we can do the same thing for lots of folks. Just creating a sense of destiny for the people in the nursing homes, for those kids, the way Brother Steve does it, for anybody in our influence. Creating a sense of destiny. Because God created each person on purpose. He's got a plan. It's a good old plan. Okay. Yeah, Tall Paul, from suicide to seminary. One moment. Oh, yeah. I heard this on the radio one time. We were supposed to work on our weaknesses. This person said, maybe we should work on our strengths more. Work on our strengths. And I know the Bible says that we're not supposed to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, Romans 12, verse 3. But I don't think it just means being too arrogant. I have to think not too highly of myself than I ought to think, because I need help a lot now. I need to be willing to ask for help, really willing to ask for help. Do you know how hard it is to change a light bulb when you use a walker? I don't have to. Joy does it and James does it. Thank you both. Appreciate your help. Joy comes over and there's a light bulb out. We'll ask her and she'll climb on a chair and change it, or the step stool. James comes over and we need a light bulb help. He doesn't. He just stands there and that works out well. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, God uses all of us. Genesis 4:2, God asked Moses, what's in your hand? This is when Moses tried to do stuff his own way and later on realized, let God do it. Years ago, Ann Grevy preached a sermon to us called What's in Your Hand? And that was a good sermon. And so here I wrote some of the people's. If Kiana would have been here, she would have known I was going, well, this is okay with Ronnie, with Elaine, with a bunch of y'all. Kids, you got kids. Kids can reach kids. They can reach kids. And then I have Peggy. She, one of the things she does for me, she makes scripture cards. They're little square things and has a verse on there. And I use them at the nursing home because I used to hand out paper, copied paper. And it, by the time it hit the wheelchair, it was completely squished. And it's easy to drop, but the cards they can keep hold of. And so they have the scripture verse that they can look at over the week and keeps them encouraged. These things are popular. Popular. So do you have any more of those? I want another one, you know, this kind of thing. And I've gone to the hospital. One of my friends went to the hospital and he carried a couple of them with him and it was sitting on his little, if you go to the hospital to visit people, they have this kind of a little cart table thingy. There were two cards sitting there. Another time they had taped them up in the dining room, big old dining room, but they had them taped on the wall. Diana's got them taped on her wall and so does others. There's a couple over at Maywood that do. And my favorite was, there was this big old bookshelf and it's got all kinds of movies in it, funny movies, Western movies, horror movies. I don't appreciate that. Somebody had gone over there and stuck one of the cards in front of the horror movies. I thought, yeah, good job, guys. That was my favorite one.
All right.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah. Anyway, yeah, we need each other. I need James. I need Joy. I need you. And even Elaine, she's always encouraging us. I need John and Annie, my nephew and niece. I need James. I need Aiden to call me for a ride. And he's always so calm. Hello. It's never an emergency. It might be, but he's calm. God made you calm. Appreciate you. All right. God's plans are better than my plans. When I was in high school, I applied for a job as a telephone operator. And that wonderful lady explained to me why I would not make a very good telephone operator and I should maybe consider something else, like cleaning hotel rooms or something, you know, something that I could actually do. Because if you had any clue what it was like for Nelson and me to grow up, our dad was like basically the town drunk, he was an alcoholic. Mom had had rheumatic fever as a kid, and it burned her brain, so she was like a little kid herself, about like a maybe 10-year-old, 12-year-old. She was like a little kid. Now, that worked out real good for you guys, James, Michael, because since she thought like a little kid, she acted like a little kid and would buy you guys junk food, candy, big gulps, one straw, share, everybody share it. Yeah, that kind of worked out. But my mom was very simple-minded, very, very simple-minded. But boy, she loved the grandkids. But the thing is, that's the reputation we had. We had two outhouses. Boy, we ranked. I mean, we had two outhouses. There's a reason for that, but no big deal. Anyway, we hauled in water, carried it in buckets, you know, that whole thing. So it was pretty primitive. So I just didn't have any hope. I didn't have any real plans for my life, but God did. I got turned down as a telephone operator. And look what happened. I ended up knowing you guys. Teaching. Went to college. I'm halfway to a master's before I realized I'm not even using this stuff. Forget it. I've got 16 hours past the basic bachelor's into a master's. But why? But anyway, look, if I'd been a telephone operator, I'd still be in Granby. I wouldn't know you guys. You know. But God had a different plan. Go running around everywhere. For a girl from Granby, it's not half bad. Carol Horn, my rancher friend, thinks that's just hilarious. Because she knew. And she knew what it was like before, and she knows what it's like now. What God did. And now I'm getting to love on and influence people and all these people. And it's not just nursing home residents. It's the staff. And the most recent one was Michelle and how we need each other. I saw Michelle. She was a cook at one of the places, and I told Brother Steve about it, and I said, could you make her a picture? And he did, and it was a cauldron with soup in it, and it talked about something you may have heard, but rules. Rule number one, the boss is always right, and there was other rules, and if you forget, refer back to rule number one, the boss is always right, and it was just cute. And on the other side, he wrote, heart to heart, he said, I've been a cook before, I know what you go through. And he wrote down some stuff. I gave it to Michelle. They were waiting for the food to come up. Everybody's ready to serve. I gave the picture to her, and it was front and back, and she melted. And she started telling me about all kinds of family issues, including she's a grandma, and her four-month-old granddaughter died that week. Four months old, and she died. And so Michelle's opening up her heart just because Brother Steve gave her a painting. We need each other. The most recent thing I did with Michelle was she came to the Friday, every other Friday group over at Inglewood Cafe and hung with us, hung out with us. God uses Esther, Michael, me. He uses Joy, James. He uses Frank. Chris, driving back from wherever she does, used to do a lot of shopping. She's over on, if you know anything about Northeast Kansas City, she is at a 7-Eleven on Benton and the Avenue. And now it's getting to be nighttime. And the car broke, the tire went flat, and she couldn't get it filled. It wouldn't work. Shoot. So what do? You don't call Shirley at a time like this. Frank? So Frank comes out and rescues us. He got us out of there, and we're alive to tell the tale. We need everybody. Everybody. Isn't that the coolest thing? Everybody's got a place to play. Everybody does. Naomi, I think what God uses for you in my life is in such an just being my encouragement. I appreciate you. All right. Jesus was willing to humble himself. I mean, you should see what it's like being a nursing. Hey, you haven't lived. I know I'm not a mom, right? You guys know I'm not a mom. But have you ever done this? You have an adult man who's got severe dementia and you're helping feed him, but you got to have him blow his nose first because there's a huge thing dripping. So I get the napkin. Okay, LJ, blow. How about that? I've earned my right, kind of. It's not 24/7, but you know, there's more stories. If you want to hear them, I'll tell them to you. I don't think you want to hear. Jesus was willing to humble himself and come as a baby. Then, when he's going to die, he chooses not to choose 10,000 angels to come rescue him. And angels, you know, I hate to burst your bubble, but angels aren't the cute little cherub thingies with diapers on and a little arrow thing. That was from the Renaissance. There are not, that's not what they look like. And when your baby dies, he doesn't go get wings either. He becomes a child of God. It's much better than that. No, angels are mighty warriors, spooky, scary things, you know. He could have called 10,000 of them and rescued him, but he wanted to die for our sins. Talk about humbling yourself. Makes me willing to humble myself and let LJ blow into the neck and not throw up. Oh, there's been some stories. I've been going now 16 years, and so, yeah, I got some stories. All right, so I put down here, because of what he was willing to do and how he loved us, shouldn't we be willing to give our lives to him fully? I'm thinking, yes. And Jesus deserves the reward he died for. That's us. It talks about the joy set before him. That was us. He was waiting to have us come along. That's the joy he had. Yeah. So we need to let our lives become a praise song. He sings over us. I want to sing to him. I remember years ago I was buffing a floor, and I thought, whatever happened to the joy unspeakable and full of glory anyhow? And I realize now the joy is just the relationship with the Lord. What happened was my friend Nancy, I was 14, we were both 14, and she said, to church with me, because they were having a you know, they used to have these little contests, bring kids to church and you get a prize. Come to church with me. I want to go to church with you. Please come. Okay, I'll come once. So I went to church, and I'm 14, and then Nancy never did keep going, but I did. And that was good. And our teacher's name was Mrs. Syme. Her daughter was in my class, Pam. She said, I'm going to give you a contest. Whoever reads the New Testament through first this summer, I'll give you a prize. I go, okay. I was staying with Grandma a lot, and so I thought, I'll read it. So I did. I started reading the Bible through, and I read the whole thing. I was the first one. I think I was the only one. And the only issue, y'all, is Mrs. Symes had quit going to church there by then, and so I never did get that prize. But then I go, oh, well. Well, since I read the New Testament, I might as well go ahead and read the Old Testament. So now I'm reading the Old Testament. And I got to the part in the book of Solomon. And by then, I'd been going to church, and I started getting hungry to know the Lord. Did not know the words, what it meant to get saved. But I kept hearing, you know, sermons, and I was reading. I'd read the New Testament, now I'm reading the Old Testament. I didn't know anything. I'm so new at this. I was reading the Old Testament, and they made this pillar of stones as a memorial, and it's there to this day. I thought you could go see it. No, that was more, what, 3,000 years ago. It's not there to this day. That was then. I didn't know anything. I got to the book of Solomon, and I started getting really hungry to know God somehow, but I didn't know the words. I even had a dream that I'd gotten right with God, and I woke up, and I go, I'm dreaming about this stuff. God, do something. You could just tell. I knew I didn't know God. And I didn't know what to do to get to know God. I didn't know what to do. And there was a guy that came up from Texas, Plainview, Texas, and he was doing a series of meetings. We called them revival meetings. And I went to talk to him. So he took time out and did all the basic salvation scriptures and explained to me how to get my heart to God. And I did. I did it. And you know what? Even though Mrs. Syme didn't stay as a Sunday school teacher long enough to give me a prize for reading New Testament, I got the real prize. I got Jesus as my Lord and my Savior. So there. Amen. That's all I got to say about that, y'all. Turning it back over to them. Love you guys. Watch out, women driving.